The Joe Beaver Show is on the air.
For years, there were forebodings, but did the powers that be pay enough attention?
We're on the eve of destruction.
And then it happened, gradually and suddenly.
We finally really did it. You maniacs! You blew it up!
The why and the wherefore of the destruction continues to be well documented, but the more pressing question now, of course, is... The answer to that existential question is not fully known, but what is known is that Beaver Nation carries on, speaking as one through it all.
Been in trouble, but I'm okay. Been through the ringer, but I'm okay.
We're strong enough to take it. We can make it.
And we have made it, at least one more time, to another edition of the Joe Beaver Show. On 1240 Joe Radio, KEJOAM.com, and 93.7 FM.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome in. It's been a long, long time. That's a tune by somebody. It's been a long, long time. Maybe a kiss to build a dream. I don't know, Louis Armstrong, but it's been a long time, John. It's good to see you again. Good morning, everybody, and
I literally have not even seen you with my eyes until right now.
I know. No, it's good to see you, John.
How's it going?
Well, it's going. Mel Allen's great call. I felt that way a little bit about the road trip when we finally pulled into Corvallis at about 1 o'clock. In the morning, Saturday night, Easter Sunday morning, about 1 a.m., the trip is going. The trip is going. It is going. It is gone. What a great call. Mel Allen came up with that. It is going. It is going. It is going. It is gone. You know, that's a great one. It might be. It could be.
Yeah.
It is.
Carey,
I mean, there have been some great ones.
Yeah, they have.
But going, going, gone, Mel Allen. But the road trip is over, and that was a long one, John. It just flat out was a long one, different hotels, a lot of bus rides, different ballparks, but an unbeaten trip. And
and
it's really good to be back, though, I will say that, and good to be back for ball games tonight and tomorrow afternoon at Goss Stadium at Coleman Field. And I just got off the phone with ticket director Aaron Meisel, who says that there are tickets, reserve seats, general admission tickets, standing room only tickets, whatever you want to get, all available for tonight's game at 5:35 and for tomorrow afternoon's matinee affair at 2:05. Tickets will be sold at the window. You can get them now in advance at beavertickets.com or at the ticket window an hour before the first pitch. Available at all levels, reserve, general admission, and SRO available. For the number three Beavers, D1 Baseball has the Beavs at number three in its latest rankings today. Now, the RPI is what it is. You know, the Beavers went unbeaten on that trip, but playing CSUN, to me, it's intriguing. In playing CSUN, they swept the series and mashed the ball all over the park, and Gavin Turley is the new home run king. And there were a lot of good things. There were also some things that are still kind of, you know, you want to see some solidity and improvement and consistency in certain areas. Yes, you do. I know we all do, and we're all, I get it. I understand completely. But the Beavers did go 7-0 on that road trip to the South, 8-0 during the week. They've won 10 straight. They're 30-7. They're ranked third by D1, which I consider the baseball authority.
Yeah, yeah.
And Aaron Fitt wrote going into the weekend series with CSUN that the Beavers had a path, that he has them. Right now, he has them projected as one of his eight national seeds.
Really?
And in moving the Beavers to number three, that kind of complements that doctrine. But he believes that the Beavers right now, if the tournament field were announced today, would be one of the eight national seeds. And that's always been not a certain path, but a path without a component of a super regional at home. The Beavers have never gone to Omaha. And the only time they lost a Super Regional at home was to Auburn in 2022 when they were a win away from going and fell just short. But the idea, they've been working hard collectively, talking boldly about Omaha. They haven't gone to the, we're just taking it one practice at a time. They do that in their overall approach to playing the game. But none of the coaches or players have ever shied away about sort of a Omaha or bust mentality and believing that they have the wherewithal to win the program's fourth national championship. That continues to be the goal and the path, and they've talked openly about it from the fall all the way into now, still believing that that's what is indeed out there and what they're capable of. So I'm not sure how you all feel about this past weekend and the week, but the road trip is over and they're home for a little bit of a two games. They'll be back again next Tuesday, but it'll feel at least like being home for a while with the ball games down the road. And that's helpful too. I mean, the Beavers schedule, and Joe Freeman, by the way, we've got two guests today. Big Jim Wilson coming up here at about 11:20 to talk about the spring football showcase, the spring game. Jim was there with Ron Callen. He sent me some reports during the course of the Beavers baseball game Saturday at CSUN when Gavin Turley did indeed establish himself as the all-time home run leader for the Beavers. Jim will share his thoughts not only about football, but his ruminations on baseball, of which he follows closely and calls, and may indeed be having a return swing with Josh here soon when I've got to sit some time out after the Hawaii trip with surgery on May 7th, Wednesday, May 7th. Finally, something I've been avoiding for years. I mean, years and years. I've had a lot of pain for years, and get that done. My family pretty much disown. If you don't get that done, we don't want any part of you anymore. It's kind of the message I've been given as I've hobbled around now for years. So I don't think that's going to clear all the hobbling. But anyway, Jim and Josh may work some together down the stretch of the year. But the Beavers' schedule, Johnny, if they're on a path now to a national seed, their schedule is good enough. Strength of schedule is good enough with high enough RPI teams on the road. And Joe Freeman will share some of his thoughts. He wrote a wonderful story on Gavin Turley, who was on the brink of setting the record and did, and a tremendous story by Joe about Gavin's process through his career at Oregon State and how he's become such a complete hitter this year, and how the home run record, even though the article that he wrote was when Gavin had tied it, he's coming down today as Joe to cover the game, and we'll probably have a follow-up piece of some sort. Gavin will be my pregame show guest later today at 5 o'clock, a little after 5. You'll go on at 4:45. We'll talk to Gavin about the home run record. And the second, it'll only be the second time that he's been. The other time we sat down, I said, I remember the nature of the conversation was, Gavin, we were in Lincoln, and we were talking about, you know, your home runs seem to come in bunches. They haven't really come. And he said, yeah, they haven't yet, but my home runs do come in bunches, and I suspect, and he didn't say, I'm going to hit a whole bunch of them now, but he has. He's been mashing it ever since, and he's just on an incredible run right now. The discipline as a hitter, the ability to use all fields. Joe Freeman explored that, I thought, in excellent detail in his story in the Oregonian. I'll piggyback on that a little bit. And I've talked to Gavin already this year about some of those things that Joe touched on in a really well-done article. Joe will join us at 12:30 to talk a little bit about just his reaction and impressions of that story with Gavin. But this team, he's a good writer. He's a perceptive and good baseball man and a good writer. So we'll get Joe's thoughts from a slightly more objective standpoint. The writers at the Oregonian over the years, whether Daschle or Goh or Bucher or Ryan White or whomever, tend to, as they should, they're not necessarily seeing all of this through, well, I think our Beavers are going to be one of those eight national seeds, Mike. I mean, they don't talk that way, nor should they. It's one of the things that the late, great Roger Kahn, he said that his editor, Stanley Woodward, when he was first writing, Woodward would take Kahn and other writers off the Brooklyn Dodgers beat. And Kahn only had it for a couple of years before being shifted over to the New York Giants. And Kahn says, well, I know the guys. I know the manager. I know the players. I have good sources. Why would you take me off the Dodgers beat now after I've built such good contacts and sources and have a relationship with the players? Woodward said, well, precisely because of that. You're too close. Mm-hmm. And Kahn would wear it on his – he became a Brooklyn Dodgers fan, even though he was a paragon of journalism, one of the great sports writers ever. Kahn even owned up to, yeah, there was something to that because he became a friend of and a fan of Jackie Robinson and Gil Hodges and Duke Snyder and company, and Roy happens. Campanella.
Yeah.
And you, so therefore, Woodward said, I can't get the best of writing or honest writing or objective writing if you have that kind of point of view and you're always sort of, so that we have that point of view. I mean, Stanley Woodward would mock us as a, you guys, we have no shred of objectivity, really. I don't claim to, per
se.
Well,
it's understood.
But I do think it is somewhat understood. But that's why once in a while to get, like you had Les Garrett on, I think, the other day, you get people on who, while they may all quietly in their heart of hearts be hoping good things for the Beavers and kind of be Beaver fans, they also tend to bring some objectivity in a way we don't or
right.
can't or whatever are restricted a little bit by. So I want to ask Joe a little bit about his thoughts on being a national seed. Does he agree with Aaron Fitt? Is there a path forward? We'll talk about all of those things. I think there is because of the teams they're playing on the road and the RPI status of Oregon, Hawaii, Iowa in particular.
Two weeks I would have said no.
Right.
I would have said most likely not. You know, wanting it to be true that they would, wanting it to be, but most likely not. Now I'm not so sure because, you know, Oregon, like you say, that's a good RPI situation. I don't know about Hawaii. I'm quickly looking it up as you're speaking, and I can't find Iowa on here. Do you know what
their RPI is? Yeah, I think it's around 80.
Okay.
So thereabouts. I have it, and
Oregon
I left
moved
it in
up
my car.
7 from
Oregon
52 to 45.
Up. And, you know, there's pain involved sometimes in that, you know, or, you know, there's an ambivalence,
yeah.
right? There's always
yeah.
an ambivalence when you hear the Oregon result. Yeah, Oregon beat so-and-so. Oregon won the series against UCLA. Oregon, and part of you, the visceral reaction is, come on, UCLA. Well, yeah, and you just beat UCLA, so it was a win-win situation for the Beavers, however that series went.
Correct.
That's going to be helpful. But now if Oregon does move up by winning the series, then if you go win the series against them, their higher status helps you in that whole, the machinations of the RPI.
Yeah,
so you kind of almost have to say, for the Beavers' sake, it's okay that they're having a decent year.
Yeah.
Because you can go beat them and that helps you.
No, anytime and we had this discussion, gosh, a couple weeks ago when you were gone about kind of revisited this issue of how much you would root for the Beavers or the Ducks, mm-hmm. depending on how it would help the Beavers. Bottom line is now this year in baseball, you root for whatever makes Oregon State's situation better.
Right.
And sometimes you can't choose because of this weekend, UCLA, Oregon, mm-hmm. you had just beaten UCLA. You don't want their numbers to drop.
Right.
Because of the algorithm, it's tough. But just a couple of notes. Iowa made a jump from 88 to 57.
Who are you looking at?
Warren Nolan?
Okay.
Yeah. I'm looking at the official NCAA. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, boy, that's different information than I saw when I looked this morning. I didn't have them.
25-11 overall.
They're at 57 in what you're looking at?
Yeah, 57.
Wow, I'm going to have to revamp my
–
I wrote everything
to 57.
Down. I must have been operating on –
And this,
anyway.
This is the same one that has Oregon State going from 9 down to 11.
Yeah, and CSUN moving up two spots from 216 to 214. That's how that works.
Three
because
losses.
Of who they play, they yeah. get pummeled essentially yeah. in three games and moved up two.
And UCLA moved from 21 to 17.
Right, because of who they played
but
on the road,
the
they
series.
Got a win. Yeah, I don't know how it all works. And everybody else that you've played, how did they do on that particular
weekend? But
that's
a great
weekend?
Jump for Iowa. That helps Oregon State.
That is helpful. Now you just got to go win the series.
Right.
Hey, let's take a break. the spring game. We'll have open phones and texts along the way. Looking forward to hearing from many of you, we hope. Spring game stuff, if you were there, the impressions, Malik Murphy and company, if you have some thoughts about all of that, we want to hit that. We're going to talk Oregon State women's golf on Wednesday with the West Coast Conference Tournament Championship to the Beavers and Don Shockley. We'll have Don and one of her players, I think, on the show on Wednesday. Open phones a little bit later in text. Big Jim Wilson next. Thanks for joining us on the Joe Beaver Show.
The understanding of the scheme, I think we're way ahead of where we're at now than where we were this time last year. So very happy with how they've learned the system, bought into what we're trying to do, and executing at a high level.
Trent Bray, last year to this year, and he chuckled when that question was posed.
Yeah.
He's there was a couple other questions on that. I just chopped it up differently. But he was a young guy. He had just gotten his job, and the addition of the new coaches like Rob Akey and the others who can deal with things while he's going hands on the defensive side of things back as coordinator.
Yeah, and that's a really good news development, I think, for the program. Jim Wilson has been saying from what practices he's seen almost from day one, and Jimmy was at the spring game, as were you. He said it's evident, even with the – it's hard to get a read with the O-line situation it was.
So many
but
guys were
still,
out.
It was clear as Jim Wilson joins us. And, Jimmy, I just got a text from brother Bobby. Bobby and your mom, Nancy, are listening. So a little pressure on from the family, Bobby and Nancy, listening in their car on their drive to the Joe Beaver Show here in Corvallis. Jimmy, it's great to have you on. Thanks for taking time. We start with defense just based on what John played in the soundbite. I didn't see a bit of it. You guys did. So let's start there. Do you really feel like the defense is going to be quite a bit better in 2025?
Yes, I do, Mike. And I think all of the things that if we're talking about the spring game, you're almost kind of looking past what actually happened on Saturday because of the bodies that were not playing and the circumstances of the event, but just watching bigger things, and I'm seeing guys flying around on defense, and the secondary guys are covering, running fast, rallying to the ball. I just think it reminded me of a couple of 2 and 3 years ago when Trent Bray was running the defense, and it looks like the Beavers going to get back to that way. And so, yes, I'm encouraged by what's going to happen defensively.
And what about then, Jim? Thank you for that. On the other side, just as I'm almost dismissive, not completely, about the Beaver baseball series at CSUN with all the runs and the home runs and the bandbox of a ballpark and the wind blowing out, I don't want to put too much stock in all the numbers in that. And offensive numbers and so on in this spring game for football, I'm not sure, again, how much you want, how much stock, so to speak, you put on it. But what were your thoughts about what you saw offensively, given the beleaguered nature of the offensive line at present?
So I counted 8 orange jerseys, and those were the offensive linemen. And so they had to go the full way. They played more than anybody. They played, those 8 guys filled out the whole scrimmage. And of those 8, I mean, you have Josh Kimatiyo, the and I'm not sure if I'm saying that right. He's the transfer from Nevada, and he played tackle at Nevada. I think he's going to be, he was a tackle all day. He's been a tackle all spring, and I think he is going to be a tackle on the Beaver roster. I think he's going to start. And other than that, Xander Esty and Nathan Elu, I think are guys that would find themselves, they look like they're in the top 10. They're in the mix, and they were there playing Saturday. There's a young guy named Adam Hawks I thought looked pretty good. He wore number 54. He was, I think he's a redshirt freshman. He had good moves. But you're talking about the majority of the guys that are going to make up your top 10 were out. You know, that would be Van Wells, the center, Tyler Volton. If he's back, I mean, he was great at Cardin in that brief, you know, whatever 3 games he played. I think Dylan Sikorsky is going to be right in the mix at guard. JT Hand will be in the middle somewhere. I don't know that he's a starter, but he's there. He's an experienced guy, but he can be a backup center, starting guard. And then the trick is, of course, finding the tackles. And the other transfer, Keon Cox from Central Florida, he did not play. He hasn't played much all spring, really. as neither has Marano and Garrett Strand. So it just is a lot of guys that would be fighting for positions that weren't. And I think I mentioned it to you in that text that I think the trick is going to be identifying the guys and then narrowing it down and getting them some continuity within those guys. I think there's enough guys. I think they're still shopping, but I think there's enough guys. You just got to figure it out and get them playing together.
Jim Wilson joining us, and they've got a veteran coach, and John just alluded to how Trent Bray has been really grateful for the people that he's brought in on this staff, even those that aren't position coaches per se. But to have Mike Cavanaugh, Jim, replace Kyle DeVan, who had to replace Jim Mahalchuk, to get Cav back, that seems like a big win. If somebody's going to figure out a rotation of guys, he's probably a pretty good guy to figure that out.
Yeah, the Beavers really landed on their feet on that one. And first of all, Cav's a darn good coach, and he's a darn good line coach, well-respected, been around, knows the Oregon State campus program and the whole thing. But the timing I already forgot his name.
DeVan?
of Kyle DeVan leaving. The timing of Kyle leaving really left the Beavers like in a dire situation, and to land a guy like Cav like that was just a stroke of luck, really. And so that one was really good. And with him back, he knows what he's doing, and I think he's got bodies. I really do. I know that there's skepticism about it just because there's so many people sitting out. But if they're all healthy, I think there's guys to choose from, and the competition will be fierce, and I think he'll work something out with that group.
We'll kind of work our way back to the other side of the ball in a moment in position groups of strength. But since we're still on the offense, Jim, What occurred to you beyond everything you've just touched on? So there are caveats everywhere here, but what else sort of with your eyes watching the offense at work, what kind of jumped out at you?
I think the quarterback, Murphy, Jabari's been good all spring. And actually Kalen Guttridge ran pretty well. I thought when he had a chance to actually run the ball, he ran better than I thought. But Murphy, he looks the part. I mean, first play of the game is a bomb, and he just ease and effortlessly throws the ball 50-some yards. It missed a little, but generally speaking, he wasn't sharp. But, I mean, the trouble on offense started shortly after Ike won on almost every play. Mm-hmm. And what I thought that he did a good job of doing was knowing when to throw it away, knowing when to keep it. And he actually altered his arm angles and his slot to get rid of balls, to escape and so forth. He just showed some different stuff amidst of what was really sort of a tough go for any offensive player. I mean, the Beavers tried to establish zero run. I mean, the first few plays were pass, and it was just like, we're trying to get some timing here in the passing game. We're not going to try to grind anything out. Plus, they couldn't with the group they had. So you just had to take that as a kind of a given. And then Malachi Durant and Taz Reddix, I thought, had good days on the outside. They caught some balls, made some plays. Obviously, the touchdown was Skylar Jensen with the all alone down the right sideline. I think he did a delay, sort of. Pause, then he went, and he was wide open for a touchdown. And then Montrell Hatton got a lot of play at running back as the third guy. He was wearing number 19. He caught some passes, ran some balls, and it's like, who's 19?
Right.
Looking at my thing. And it's some number changes. You're going to see Dexter Foster was 55, I believe, last year. He's going to wear 7. And another kind of oddball one is Caulfield, the tight end, he was 88. Now he's 8. And it was just kind of weird to see him in that single number. He looked skinnier all of a sudden.
Hey,
and,
Jimmy. Yeah.
But anyway, it's just always fun. I don't know. I mean, I don't even think Hankerson played. Saladin Ala, he might have carried the ball a few times. But for the most part, I mean, there was really no emphasis whatsoever on any run. And so I think that was, by design. They wanted to get the timing and the pass and so forth.
You told me in the text, Malik Murphy looks the part physically. He's got the arm strength. It's just going to take time and cohesion in the system and health and the O-line, working with the receivers. The throw part of it, you think is going to be pretty good, it sounds like. What about the – does he have a little DJ Uiagalelei in him in terms of how you think they might use him in the run game? Will it be a little bit similar to DJU, do you think?
I hope. I don't think they would rely on it as heavily in the short yardage, but they did do a zone read. And he kept the ball, and he ran downhill hard for about 7 yards. And it looked like, hey, you know, I mean, and somebody's going to have to tackle him. Now, I know he's not going to seek contact, but, I mean, he's a big, strong kid. And then on a fourth, and I think the same series, it was fourth and one, the Beavers ran an option right. You know how they were very effective with that option at times last year. And he faked the pitch. The guy went with the pitch back, and he cut it inside. They stopped the play, but I think it had that play just ran all the way through. He had to run for 40 or 50 yards. Mm-hmm. So my answer to your question is I hope, because he is fast and he is strong, and he should be a threat. And even if the Beavers just show some of that, I think whenever they do show it, they'll be successful, and that will at least keep the teams honest.
Big Jim Wilson joining us here on the Joe Beaver Show. There was a lot of overthrows, and some of them were by quite a bit, and there was a lot of questions in the media scrum afterward, Jim. Is there any concern about that? And in fact, when posed to Coach Gunderson and Coach Bray, it wasn't poo-pooed. It was like, yeah, well, they'll have to work on their timing and things like that. But what do you think about some of the overthrows on the deep balls?
The quarterbacks, by and large, were not very accurate over the course of the day. And you can chalk that up to whatever you want. You can chalk that up to, you know, you can say, hey, the quarterback's not very accurate. But I think a bigger sample size might be the full season he played at Duke. And just look at the numbers and ask yourself, is he an inaccurate quarterback or isn't he? Yeah, I mean, yeah, did he miss some passes? Yeah. Was there pressure? Absolutely. Was he working with a guy that he's probably not going to be – spending as much time working with? I mean, just everything, all
sure.
of it.
Yeah.
And if you ask Brian Gunderson right now, I think he has an idea what he wants to do, but he still doesn't know what he's going to be able to do, because he's got a better idea which of those linemen are going to be ready to go and what they're going to have up there. But when they figure that out, they're going to want to run, and that's going to be part of the package. And then the things that they want to do in the passing game will come off mm-hmm. of that run game. And so, you know, that offense is a work in progress. And you know, Saturday was just more of an indication of that being the case.
And I thought it was light years ahead of last year at this time. So that's always something positive. One question, Jabari Johnson is vastly improved. He went and sat there and went through progressions and before eventually either throwing or running. He was tremendous. And Gunderson hinted at, you know, using them both on plays on occasion. What do you think about Jabari and his improvement?
I think you're right. I think he's improved greatly, and I think he's improved enough that there will be some sort of Jabari package that makes its way onto the field on Saturdays. And whether they're sort of ingenuitive with both of them in the game at the same time, or just here comes Jabari. And I just know that the first series he did, the first play he did, it was just kind of like a bootleg, and he was out on the outside, and it's like, whoa!
Yeah.
You know, there's some speed on the edge.
Yeah.
And I think he ran for about 15 yards, just, for, you know, first play. I think he is, you're right about a few things you said there. Where they were this time last year, it was like, oh my gosh. Mm-hmm. You know, we literally didn't know if anybody was capable of being quarterback, mm-hmm. let alone, you know, two guys.
Yeah.
And we didn't know who the quarterback was going to be based on, we really didn't know if anybody was ready. And then, and this year we don't necessarily know who's the quarterback, but I think we do have a pretty good hunch that Murphy's your guy, but Johnson is capable and will, I think, find time in the fall.
Jim, last thing, and we'll leave defense alone. We'll talk more football later, but you're also following baseball closely. They're number three in the country now in D1. They've won 10 straight. When you look at the team and kind of where they are and what's going on, what are some of your thoughts before we turn you loose?
Well, I bet they wish they could play every game at Pioneer Park.
Yeah, that's not a bad thought.
Maybe not the pitchers.
Right.
Hey, we said it, Mike, from the go-get. I may even be wrong about this. I thought they were overrated to start the year. When I say overrated, mm-hmm. I just thought right now, top 10 team, I don't see that. Not with a first-time Friday night guy, mm-hmm. a first-time Saturday night guy, and a first-time Sunday night guy. Mm-hmm. And some answers to, you know, we figured Arquette would be, you know, the big splash, but, you know, you still had to make room for Bazana. You lost, and you lost a couple of left-handed bats in the outfield, which I was concerned about in McDowell and Casper and the catcher, you know, and all of those things are still sort of out there. I wish there was two catchers like they had mm-hmm. a year ago, mm-hmm. just because I worry about what happens if anything happens to Wilson. But offensively, I mean, they got guys that can homer up and down the lineup. I think defensively, they're solid. I really like Singer at second base. And the outfield, I think, is very good. Wilson Weber behind the plate. The corner infield, you know, it just, you know, we're hoping, you know, we're just hoping that everything comes out all right. But they're starting to play good baseball, and it's just like we said, it may take a bit, it may be a while, but you watch. You don't want to play this team in late May and June, because they may be a top 10 team at that time. And, yeah. and right now, I mean, they're in the top 5 in some polls. So mm-hmm. they're in a good trajectory, and they've got a big week coming up.
Jimmy, great talking to you. Thanks for making time. We appreciate it. We'll talk soon. Always enjoy having you on, buddy. We'll talk in a bit. Thanks for joining the show.
You got it, guys. Thanks.
Thank you. Big Jim Wilson back to work in his job as an educator of our youth. Nanny and Bobby, I hope you enjoyed that. I always love talking to Big Jim Wilson. We will wrap it. He needs to move on to his next class. He says he's got kind of an odd class schedule today for some reason. Normally, he's in the 11:45 to top of the hour window when we're able to get him.
Well, usually we also can't hear him very well, and then the bell in the hallway yeah. goes. And I mean, that was as clean and normal a sound as ever.
So, Johnny, let's take a break. And then I'd like, you know, anything that occurred to you, I mean, you asked Jimmy some questions and made some observations, but anything else, let's get into some open phones and texts. We're in that mode until about 12:30 today, when Joe Freeman from the Oregonian, who wrote an excellent article on Gavin Turley, now the new home run king. Any thoughts about the Beaver baseball week and a half away and running the table 8 straight away from Goss? Your thoughts, 10 wins in a row. Since the 12-0 defeat at the hands of UC Irvine, go man go. What do you think? What are your thoughts right now, today, as the Beavers host Gonzaga tonight with tickets available, 5:35, 2:05 tomorrow, tickets available at all levels for both games. 541-497-5356 on the Joe Beaver Show.
Didn't see it.
Well, I'm hoping on Wednesday, I think Wednesday, when the selection show will occur, that we'll be able to visit with Rhea Nak. I don't know how to pronounce her last name, so I apologize for that aforehand. But Beaver sophomore golfer Rhea Nakao, I'm going to go with that for now, not having seen a pronunciation guide. Nakao receives a congratulatory hug after she won the West Coast Conference Championship on the second hole of a playoff. So the Beavers win the team crown, and Rhea wins the individual crown at the WCC golf tournament in Fairfield, California, this past weekend. We hope to talk to Rhea and to Don Shockley at some point on Wednesday. Sydney Weiss is confirmed for Wednesday at 12:30 for reasons beyond not only her coaching acumen and reflecting a little bit on the season that the Beavers had in winning the West Coast Conference Tournament, as the Oregonian headline, Oregon State wins first ever women's golf conference championship, and Ryan Clark of the Oregonian begins his story thusly: add another West Coast Conference championship to the trophy case for Oregon State, referring back to the women's basketball yeah. team winning the West Coast Conference tournament championship, and now they've been joined by the women's golf program. Really good news, and we hope to celebrate that story on Wednesday. Don't have them locked in or confirmed, but we hope to. Sydney will join us. She is going to be the guest speaker, and I want to get this word out, too, as we await any calls. Lines are open. The text line's open. if you want to reflect on your impressions on the spring game, if you went, if you followed Beaver baseball closely, every game that the Beavs have played on this eight-game swing away from Goss, feel free to jump in on that. Highlights, concerns, the hand-wringing that you're doing. Baseball is a worrying thing, said Stanley Kovaleski. You've won 10 in a row, and now you're just thinking, okay, you know, we give up too many runs. We got to do this. We got to do that. I know. So I'm just wondering kind of how you're feeling about all of it. But Gavin Turley's career and year, feel free to jump in. 541, Iva Arquette. Transcendent player. Unbelievable.
He's as hot as Turley is.
I mean, he's
incredible.
He's hotter and would be the story. Yeah. Turley rises to the top of probably in baseball, the home run records of various kinds. In a game, consecutive games with a home run, mm-hmm. single season home run, career home runs. Home runs are, they rule in terms of what we look for, I think has always captivated us
right,
as fans.
Right.
The first number I can remember in sport is 714.
Even saying that, as I would come and go from your broadcasts over those 3 days, every time I would come back, Arquette would be up, he'd hit a home
he
run.
He'd hit another one.
It seemed like he just, every time, that he would hit a home run.
The year he's having and the way he defends and the way he leads.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, we are blessed to
and
have
singles,
him for one
doubles.
Year.
I mean, it's incredible. You and I spoke on the phone one of those days, and I asked you, could he be a 1-1 guy? And you said, well, we were just kind of talking mm-hmm. about that. Mm-hmm. And since that conversation, he did even better.
Yes.
You talked with his agent, not about him or right. at all, but Scott Boris, but since that day, mm-hmm. he's played even better.
He has. Like, it's unbelievable.
I'm
the
more
level
apt
that he's
to
achieving.
Bring it up and say, you know, it's
he's
it's
moving
a
into the
good
conversation.
Possibility.
1-5
for sure.
A lock.
Yeah.
But depending on how the other players and all of that, and if Iva just stays on this kind of
yeah.
incredible, he's not going to stay quite this hot, you know, 6-for-6, 7 RBIs, grand slam. I mean, maybe, but if he continues to produce the way he is, then that 1-5 becomes, well, anywhere from 1-3, and then the 1-3 becomes, you know, he might be another. How about that? If you go back-to-back years, 1-1, I'm not saying it's likely,
no,
but I'm saying
no.
that the
possible.
Likelihood is greater now than I would have thought at the beginning
and just
of the
to
year.
Even be able to say it's possible is yeah. pretty incredible. And not only back-to-back years, but 3 times in 6 years
yeah.
in the Pacific Northwest.
Right. It's incredible.
Is mind-blowing.
Take a look at the RPIs, the rankings, and so on, and you look, if you go to D1 Baseball or the NCAA yeah. RPI page, and you're right about the jump. I did write everything down on my scorecard for tonight's broadcast. Iowa did jump to 57.
Did you write it that way?
Yeah, I read it differently. They did jump to 57, so the Beavers at number 11. But when you look at...
What in the world did they do to go 30 spots?
That's a good question. See, I don't know who
they're
25
played. And
they
11.
They must have swept a series on the road in the Big Ten at a decent program. That's all I can say. I didn't see who they were playing.
Yeah.
But that's a big jump. And that helps the Beavers when they go back to Des Moines.
Well, not only that, but they had already looked ahead, they did, to say, ooh, this Oregon Blue Blood Oregon State team is coming to town. Let's move it to
yeah.
Des Moines to, I think, a Triple-A park.
Yep. UCLA at 17. The Beavers are number 11 in the RPI. The Bruins at 17. UCI 20 and Cal Poly 21. So series wins over Irvine and Cal Poly 20 and 21. That's good. At Oregon this weekend for the Beavers at 45. At Hawaii the following week. Hawaii at 56 on the road. At Iowa or Des Moines at 57. So those are good road trip RPI opportunities for the Beavers to hold their ground, maybe even move up a little bit in the RPI world. If they win those series or sweep, it helps them tremendously because the rest of the teams they're playing, including tonight, Gonzaga's at 134.
Uh-huh.
And you've got Long Beach State at 154, Portland at 183. And just for what it's worth, looking back over the road trip, Cal State Fullerton's at 165. CSUN, whom the Beavers swept, mm-hmm. moved up two spots from 216 to 214. But that's sort of a look at the RPI world the Beavers find themselves in today.
Well, I will say this, and I mentioned this morning, that while we say what we say and try it, well, mm-hmm. okay, I will say I am surprised that they're ranked as high as they are. I am.
The Beavers?
Yes, okay. Because of the way they give up runs and play. But as someone noted, looking from the outside, they don't know. They just see the scores and the 10-game winning streak.
We have open phones and texts if you'd like to jump in at 497-5356. We're going to be in this mode until 12:30 if you'd care to join us. 541-497-5356, the Downward Dog phone line and the University Honda text line. I mentioned Sydney Weiss on Wednesday. She will join us.
Yeah.
And we've got a lot of things to talk about. The championship, we'll talk golf championship perhaps on Wednesday too. But Sydney is the keynote speaker for a huge event, for something we've always talked about and rallied behind and supported through the years with Helen Higgins and other guests over the years on the show, Jamie Lanz and others, the 27th annual fundraising breakfast for the Corvallis Boys and Girls Club is coming up on May the 1st, which I believe May 1st is a Thursday. That's a Thursday, correct? It's impossible for me to remember what day it is and all. May 1st. What day of the week is May 1st? That's the question. Anyway, May 1st, Thursday. That's a Thursday, a week from this Thursday. Sydney is the speaker, and we're hoping that you'll get tickets to support the event, get a table, make a contribution, go hear Sid, and make a contribution to the great effort of the Corvallis Boys and Girls Club. Coffee social starts around 7:15 Thursday morning on May 1st, 7:30, with the event getting underway, the 27th annual fundraising breakfast, raising funds for so many of the youth programs. And I really love to see and hear this, a special focus on youth literacy, helping kids catch up with their reading skills. Wonderful to hear. They're also investing in their job skills training program through the funds that come to this breakfast for high school teens, raising funds for sports scholarships. Sydney Weiss was a volunteer at the club when she was playing for the Beavers. She's been invited back to come give back. The late, great Ken Johnson got Sydney and the women's basketball team connected to the goings-on at the Corvallis Boys and Girls Club. And the rest of the team, the Beaver women's basketball team, will be there on Wednesday, the day before, to volunteer and help with the setup and get the tables and chairs and all the other stuff ready to go for the event on Thursday, a week from Thursday, May 1st. Sydney Weiss is the keynote speaker, so we'll have a lot to talk to Sid about why that's important to her, what her essentially asking her to give us, unless she takes a grocery bag or something in a piece of paper and writes it on the train, as the old myth of Lincoln going to Gettysburg. Ah, I got to give a speech. Give me something to write on. I'll come up with something here. About 90 years ago. No, I'll change that to 47 years ago. I mean, supposedly Lincoln, the greatest speech in American history, there was a myth around it for a while that he just kind of composed it on the fly on the train there.
When did he do it?
He gave it a lot of Gary Wills, Lincoln at Gettysburg, describes the process, and it was well thought out. It was the most impactful, shortest speech probably ever that we've heard on our land. And he put plenty of time in it. It wasn't just sort of composed like, Edward Everett's the main speaker. Well, he's going to talk for 2 hours, which he did.
He did,
and nobody remembers anything really that he said. Although in the Gary Wills book, a great book, Lincoln at Gettysburg, he does reproduce the entire speech, which I've read a few paragraphs here and there, but
the whole 2 hours?
He produces the whole speech that took Edward 2 hours to deliver.
Thankfully, it's a book and you can skip through
exactly. But Lincoln's speech was such that we're going to go to Dave here in just a second. I mentioned this the other day when the score went to 16-11 in the Beavers game in game two. I know we got to 15-12, which enabled me to speak of the mnemonic device of the Civil War in 93. We like the score of 15-12 in Scorigami. That's the score of the Beaver win in the Civil War in Eugene in 93. 16-11, the year the KJV came out. And I've been reading in another book about Lincoln that one of the writers standing by didn't like Lincoln's purple prose with 47 years ago. And he said, why 47? And his account in the service the next day, the newspaper the next day for whom this writer was writing for, said Lincoln's speech began About 90 years ago, our fathers brought forth on this continent. Can you imagine that? 67 years ago is one of the greatest openings and most memorable in the history of life. And this writer says, nah, I don't need it. About 90 years ago, our fathers brought. I mean, how can it be? Let's go to Dave on the Downward Dog phone line. Dave, good morning.
Hey, good morning. you bring up Lincoln and all. I think, if he wrote it on the train and he put a lot of effort into it, you can just imagine. One of my favorite movies is River Runs Through It, and there's kind of towards the opening, the boys wants to go fly fishing really bad, and he has to write a letter or something for his dad who's teaching him English, and his dad hands it back to him and says, shorter yet. And, you know, he goes and rewrites it, and he hands it to him, and his dad reads it, and he says, you know, shorter yet. So that whole process of, and making him choose vocabulary that portrays a lot in it, right? And that's the beauty of Lincoln's speech.
Yes.
Is just choosing the right words and the way he put it together. So I think that's fascinating to hear a little bit about that. Baseball, I did text in, and you know, it's easy to see how we jumped three when there was three teams above us that had bad weekends, including Georgia, who got swept by Vanderbilt. Kentucky dropped 2 of 3, and I think one of the other schools dropped 2 of 3. So the SEC is consuming itself right now, much like we used to do in the Pac-12 football schedule.
Right. Right.
So I don't feel bad for that. So it's, you know, go out and win. Just go win. And, you know, it's going to be hard to keep a top 3, 4, 5 team out of hosting a national seed if even if the RPI is a little bit lower. I think that the human nature of that is going to say they deserve it. And I know I said it before, you know, they want to have more than one team in the West host if they can. So I think Oregon State would be the next best thing after Texas. So
I think it
goes well for that. As for Arquette, you know, it's funny. I didn't imagine him going the way he's going, but I remember listening to him, you know, listening to the radio early on and thinking this guy's pretty good. And then the first time I saw him on TV was, and I don't remember what series it was, maybe a home series, our first home series. And he made a couple of catches in the shallow outfield he ran down, and I thought, man, this guy, if he can start hitting, he's a shortstop with a lot of length. He's tall, he's got an arm, he plays good defense, he's got, you know, if he can start hitting for power, and he's really come into it. So
Gosh. Special, Dave. It's special to be watching him. Hope you can get to some games here tonight or tomorrow. Thanks for the call. We're going to have open phones between now and 12:30, and some texts have come in. Thoughts about the spring game, the baseball situation. I saw Teresa Gould in the airport in Burbank, and she told me the whole story and asked me not to. No, she didn't. But I did see Teresa Gould coming back from our spring game. We'll talk about all of that as we go.
Hey, Siri.
Uh-huh?
Take me to the Joe Beaver Show, 1240 Joe Radio.
One option is Joe Crow Reservoir in Oregon. Is that the one you're looking for?
No.
Which the Joe Beaver?
The Joe Beaver Show, 1240 Joe Radio.
On it.
It's a destination people have sought for generations.
Are we near Oregon?
And take my wagon train to the Willamette Valley in Oregon.
Be sure to come prepared.
I'm fascinated too. Right on the arm.
And with the proper gear.
Shall we select our masks?
And even in this exacting age.
Everything you say comes back to bite you.
Come ready to contribute, even if your own son has his doubts.
Dad and his mysterious phone calls.
Remembering what a call to Joe can do.
Those phone calls put you through college.
As you draw closer, note the surrounding characters.
Chapel is closed for the COVID.
And know this, John and Mike will celebrate when you get here.
Bells will ring when you arrive.
Arrived at the Joe Beaver Show, 1240 Joe Radio.
Into the second hour, open phones and texts available now. We'll get to the University Honda text line if you have anything you'd like to share on the Downward Dog phone line. This would be a great time to jump in. 541-497-5356. What was your experience of Beaver baseball like? over the weekend, over two weekends. If I remember correctly, we had two series. We were at Cal State Fullerton, then we were at UCLA, then we were at CSUN.
And the last CSUN game, remember how I said talked about the first one on TV was okay. Whoever was operating the behind home plate camera was, you know, inexperienced. So then the last CSUN game was horrendous. The broadcaster was okay, but the camera work and the technical directing, like, it reminded me of a few games I had to call during the COVID year when the camera would show the pitcher from a side
after
angle.
After a hit.
No, he would show the pitcher from a side angle pitch, and the camera never left. And you're looking at the pitcher, and you don't
know.
That's
what I mean. You don't even know. Yeah, foul was ball, ball, strike, anything. Home run.
Right.
The camera stays with the pitcher. Those were some challenging times, for sure.
Yeah.
But if you have any observations from a fan standpoint about what unfolded here in our recent stretch of games away from Goss, tickets available for today's game at 5:35, as well as tomorrow's matinee at 2:05. Did you go to the spring football game? Did anything occur to you while watching that? Was it a fun day? Good weather, good experience? Any players make an impression? Good, indifferent, unfavorable? Whatever you'd like to jump in with, feel free at 541-497-5356. Canzano's latest piece, his Monday mailbag, one of the questions is it just me? And this I do worry about, the long term. We're locked into a good Beaver baseball season right now. And I think our fans and our fans with Beaver baseball are all in and locked in and excited about the way the team's playing. I do think, you know, my hope is that of all the games on the road this past 8 days, that the Tuesday game at UCLA is the true picture of what Beaver pitching is going to be.
It's an outlier.
It kind of is.
It was a great game.
Wyatt Queen, James DeCramer, Leif Palmer, you're still looking to have roles defined. And I will say that DeCramer wasn't part of kind of what unfolded at CSUN. I think he's a comer. I think Leif Palmer's stuff was his man against UCLA. Wyatt Queen looks like a guy. That's one of the things that's been a little bit, I wouldn't say concerning, I suppose, disconcerting, is just when a guy sort of looks like, he's turned a corner, then his next outing doesn't go quite so well. So we're looking down the stretch. I get it. We're looking for kind of solidity and consistency, and maybe that still is keeping you up. If baseball is a worrying thing, that maybe even with 10 straight wins and ranked third in the country, that's keeping you up a little bit. I get it. But Joe Freeman will join us at 12:30. Florida State, I'm not sure where they are in the rankings or the RPI, but Joe, I'm going to have to ask Joe. Say, Joe, why are you a Florida State fan? But he is enough that he listens to their games on the radio.
Wow.
That's a big fan if you're doing that.
Right now.
They're 10.
RPI.
Okay, 10 RPI, Beavers at 11. But he said they've been a top 10-5 team all year long. And he said when he listens to their games, he hears their announcers, the bullpen. Bullpen issues, we got to get that cleaned up. My sense, John, and I haven't studied the scores of all the teams involved in college baseball in 2025, but I'm not sure that there are dominant pitching staffs that are just going to mow you down really anywhere. The scores that I read when I do top 25 scores at the end of games are, the numbers are pretty high. And it makes me think that, as the phrase goes, things are tough all over. That there's the offenses right now are running hot. They're ahead of pitching and so on. That the Beavers, with their depth of pitching and the number of arms, when Jimmy Wilson says the Beavers on offense, when they get all their offensive linemen back, Mike Cavanaugh and Trent and Evan Gundy and everybody, what they've got to figure out is a rotation of guys, the best eight to mix in the rotation. I almost feel like by analogy with the baseball pitching staff, you kind of ride a hot hand if you get it on a given day, like AJ can get hot and get a bunch of outs, go four innings and look like a world beater, and then maybe not quite so effective as next time out. It's a finesse game. And maybe the roles are less clear and defined and guys have been a little more inconsistent in them. But I do think there's enough power arms, there's enough good stuff, there's even some matchup situations you can turn to here and there. Maybe you flip Kelgio and Segura goes to the front, and Kelgio feels more comfortable coming out of the bullpen. I think the outliers for Dax and Ethan, their starts weren't great at CSUN. Part of me wants to dismiss almost everything in the CSUN series from a pitching standpoint. Certainly not an offense. We'll take those numbers and all the home runs, but that ballpark wasn't an anomaly. I don't put a whole lot of stock in what was going on, even though I, too, was fretting at times when big leads were dwindling. So I'm with you on all of that, everybody. But I think we're all locked in on the Beaver baseball season and excited about it.
What was odd about the park? Was it short?
Short and the wind blowing out.
Oh, well, I heard your story about the hat and the glasses that were blowing out.
The hat and the glasses are blowing towards from right behind second base, ended up on the warning track and left,
in
and
left
it didn't
field.
Take long.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's what you were kind of dealing with there.
What was straightaway center? 400?
390.
390, and then the alleys and the
360 and 325 down
short.
The lines. It was short, and it played short. It was a bandbox. So I'm not losing too much sleep about the runs, even though there were times I was, well,
was it five runs
up.
In the ninth and seven?
Yeah. 15 to 7 and ended up.
You can't do
sports
that. You can't do that.
John, I guess you can because you won the game and you've won 10 in a row. That's my story, but I don't.
You would know more on those scores because I did notice that you not only gave the score, but you were able to say, well, that was a rubber match game. That one was a rubber
match
game.
Right.
So you've
games.
Been looking at them consistently.
That's true, and I'm not seeing anybody right now with pitching that's just blowing the world away. Right.
Two to nothing,
1-0, 2-1. Rare. So if the Beavers have the lineup and the wherewithal to mash people, maybe that's just got to be the path. Pitching and the defense is good. Pitching's going to be good enough, I believe, for the Beavers to win the rest of their series, get a national seed.
And there's no argument that offense can win you these games.
Yeah, that's true. So let's go to Tumwater, and we'll get to the Canzano mailbag as it relates to Pac-12 expansion. Teresa Gould was, of course, coy. When I saw her in the airport, she wanted to visit with Mitch. I introduced. They knew each other. She said, is Mitch here? Yeah, he's right over here. They had a good conversation. Teresa was not at all revelatory in what she said, but she said, you're going to like it. There's news coming soon. And you, Mike, she said, Mike, you're going to like it. And fans are going to like what we have coming. It's going to be good. I mean, so she was optimistic, not like, I don't know. We're still working on it. She had a bright visage about her, and that's all she could reveal.
So let me ask our caller.
Yeah, let's go to
Dave. Does this lower the Klyavkov scale for you?
Let's go to Dave in Tumwater. Dave, good afternoon.
Well, actually, I'm south of Tumwater, fellas. I'm on my way.
Good.
For me, is a rare two-game midweek baseball road trip. But and before I forget, happy Easter again to you both.
Thank you.
You too.
Families. So, Mike, what that news about from Teresa answers is Brooks Hatch's a Good Friday lament, which was, it's time for the conference to just send out a signal. Just give us a bone. Just give us something we can chew on so we can, it's like chewing on an aspirin so you can kill the pain and anxiety a little bit. So that would seem to answer that question.
Mm-hmm. I hope so. I mean, she didn't, there was nothing. And of course, she's not going to tell me standing there in the airport, well, here's who we're adding. Here's who to deal with. These are the numbers. I mean, I didn't expect that. I wouldn't even ask her that. But her countenance, Dave, was really upbeat, and she was happy with how things were going. And that was enough for me to feel better rather than worse, if that makes any sense. If I would have seen any sort of head nod and deep breath, well, it's still a work in progress. No, she said, hey, we've got something coming soon, and I think you are going to like it. Made me feel better.
Well, good. And I put a lot of stock in that kind of thing as well, Mike, the psychological, subtle psychological messaging sometimes are conveying with body language, countenance, et cetera. So I need to get my attention back to driving. So two quick questions. And this might take some research, Mike. I'm not even sure if you'll be ready by game time. But if you were to rack up the best statistical year for each of the following four Beaver baseball greats, Jacoby Ellsbury, Michael Conforto, Adley Rutschman, and Travis Bazana, and rack up number five, Iva Arquette, Where does that? How do you rank those five best? That's Mount Rushmore plus one to go a little Chris Russo on you. So rack up those five, those four in the books. Five well on its way. Who has the best numbers? That's question one. No need to respond now. Second question, you might be willing to speculate. If Iva seems to have moved him up, as I interpret you, to maybe a top three, and I'm going to go public this week with Russo on my latest tip on what to watch out for from Oregon State baseball, in fact, maybe today. But where do you think Gavin Turley projects in the upcoming Major League Baseball? Don't hang up on me, Mike.
No, I'm not.
John, because I'm not streaming. I want to hear that answer.
Okay.
And then you can cut me loose, please.
Okay, we'll put you on hold then, Dave. We'll put you on hold. You'll be able to hear us on the hold function. Thank you for the questions. They're good questions. And it would require going back. Conforto's best year offensively was his freshman year. Jacoby's best year, 2005, when he hit the Ted Williams-esque 406. Adley's best year was 2019, but 2018 he was incredible too. But the best overall year when he was 1-1 and player of the year was 19. Boz last year with his incredible 28 home run season and 1-1. And Iva, I mean, the very fact that we're, when he mentions those names, Jacoby, Conforto, Adley, Boz, Arquette, and Scott Boras himself went out of his way when I went up to him. I mean, I see Teresa Gould in airplane. Hey, Teresa, come here. You know, hey, Boris, hey, Scott, come here. It's not quite like that, but I did seek Scott out to introduce myself because I've seen him off and on at our games through the years. Never wanted to bother him, so to speak, but I saw just where he was standing at this little bandbox of a ballpark at Cal State Northridge. And one of the things, too, that I liked, and I even mentioned it, I think, to you on the show on Friday, the guy, he's the super agent in baseball. I mean, he is the man, and he does well for his clients. And that was one of the questions I wanted to ask him about. If you were Lyman Bostock's agent and he wanted to give money back, like Lyman did when he got off to a poor start, and he just kind of laughed about it and said, well, that can never happen. It wouldn't happen legally. I told him what Lyman did, and he goes, well, I wasn't aware of that part of it, that Lyman felt he was being overpaid after signing a free agent deal and gave money back and distributed it around to charities throughout the Los Angeles area.
So he knew he wanted to give it back, but he didn't know that he followed through with it.
Yeah, and so it was even better that the Angels as an organization did not take any of the money. Oh, good idea, Lyman, because as Buzzy said, Buzzy Bavese, the GM who helped negotiate the deal, I can't take money back when you're doing poorly because you could get hot and come back to me in 6 months and say, I want more than what we agreed to. So we just can't do that.
But it's interesting that what you said to me, it sounded like with
Boris,
that as you go through the schooling to become an agent, it's a story. That's like an example.
He was aware of it, yes.
Like, oh, yeah, we know about that, but we're not going to do that.
Boris, though, the thing I liked about him was his going out of his way to say, hey, we love your program. What a great coach. An amazing job that Pat Casey did. And I told him, hey, the very first game I shared with Scott, I said the very first game I called was right here in this ballpark for the Beavers in 99. And the Beavers lost 16-4. And he said they went 19-35 that year. I said, Pat built the thing from there in that first year in the Pac-12 to what the program is now. And then he said, well, he did a great job.
Yeah.
I have all the respect in the world for him. And we've had good luck with guys out of your program. And he said, like Jacoby and like Michael Conforto.
Was he Jacoby's agent?
Yes.
So I remember you talking to us about
Theo Epstein. But that was a general manager getting ready to make a draft, not an agent.
Okay. Yeah.
Under the
bleachers.
Under the bleachers at Husky Ballpark 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Gosh, time.
When they had Viz Queen as their press box.
Yes, they did. They did.
Press box walls.
So, I don't know about Gavin, Dave, to answer your question, but he is having, he looks to me like a top 10 kind of pick. Especially the way he's going now and the way he's completed himself as a ball player, his defensive ability. I'll pose the question later to some folks around the ballpark, Dave, and may have something to share about it during the broadcast tonight. We've been fixated on his home run chase. He now owns it. But I think the way he's swinging it, using the whole field, has cut his strikeout rate down tremendously, becoming a more than serviceable outfielder, good outfielder. His pursuit of balls is laying out some spectacular catches. He's becoming, when he was a little indifferent to defense, as some of the great offensive players can be, he's worked on that too. We'll talk to Joe Freeman about all of this here in a few minutes. Now, as to Canzano, the mailbag stuff is always good. It's a little bit like the old George Passero. And Dave, thank you. Good to talk to you. And thanks for the question about the other hitters and their greatness and the best years that they've had through their careers. In Jacoby, Conforto, Adley, Boz, and Arquette, and Gavin Turley now too. Good stuff on the mailbag if you read Canzano and the Bald-Faced Truth. One of the questions is, if you, John, were Teresa Gould, what's your next expansion move? And again, there isn't. He said, I predict we'll get news on the media rights deal this week. I agree with what John says there, because that Teresa hinted at that. She said, we've got some good news coming on a couple of fronts, maybe some as early as, and this was Saturday, maybe as some early at the end of the week, this coming week.
And so, that's mostly on media rights, probably.
Right. The deal, the 2025 media rights.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Canzano's all but said.
He has, but 13. I think there's more, and Teresa even hinted at the media rights deal will be a picture of, not for 2025, what's going to be happening beyond. She said to me, because we want to be promoting our product throughout the 2025 season.
Right.
So we want carriers that are going to be with us and continue to be part of that in the final media rights deal going forward after this one-year one-off again in 25. So,
well, the thing, though, is that the media rights for 25 is dealing with two teams, and then 26 is dealing with an entire conference.
Right. But I think the way the two teams are going to look will give us a feel and a hint for how
I'm okay with that if the money's there.
Here's another question. What do you think of Wazoo? This is to John. Elizabeth Cantwell's recent comments in the student newspaper concerning the Pac-12, and she said, apparently President Cantwell and Pullman said this, well, we want to stay west of the Mississippi, or, she added, or on the Mississippi. So
who said that?
The president at Washington State.
Okay. Sometimes school ADs or presidents will say things they're not supposed to, and that's how we can find out.
And so Cantwell said, quote, I really would like to see a successful, at least high mid-tier conference that doesn't send student athletes all over the country, let's say west of the Mississippi, or let's say on the Mississippi.
Who's on the Mississippi?
Mississippi's wide enough in certain spots where you probably could build a venue. But she said, let's say on the Mississippi. And Canzano puts that graphic of the Mississippi flowing through our great country.
That's two-thirds across the country.
It's a long way, but on the Mississippi. For this discussion, Canzano, right, let's bring back the expansion map and add the Mississippi River as an overlay.
Yeah.
The river's path touches Memphis and Tulane.
Ah.
So is this Cantwell thinking, well, west of the Mississippi? Oh, I mean on the Mississippi.
Now, if
people
she would
are
have
wanting
held
to
it,
parse that out and read stuff into
she,
it.
If she wanted to keep from getting in any kind of trouble, she should have just said west of the Mississippi.
Yes, she should have.
Because she wouldn't be lying.
No.
If those two schools are on the Mississippi but on this side of it, she wouldn't be lying if she didn't say
I'm
on
not
the
sure.
Mississippi.
I'm not sure. I think they're – let's see here. Let
she
me
should
see
have
this.
Said
Yeah, they are. I think they are on the west side of the Mississippi.
So that would have
slightly.
Been the smarter play. Just west of the Mississippi. A couple of inches, but hey.
Okay. Hey, let's take a break, Doc. And then when we come back, we'll visit with Joe Freeman of the Oregonian. Before we take the break, though, anything on the text line quickly before, and we appreciate people taking time. Let's run through a couple, and then we'll visit with Joe Freeman.
S says, yes, RPI is there for the taking, but Beavs still have to win most of these games, which are mostly away. That's the key. I'm not comfortable saying that we're just going to go roll through this remaining schedule.
No.
Obviously hopeful, but realistic. Kind of bites me that we gave up 30 runs to CSUN.
Believe me, yes, it does everybody. I know. But I think there'll be a sense of restored order the next couple of days and even this weekend. And I'm not going to put too much into it now, and I do know the team's won 10 straight.
A couple of questions from two different people about what do we know, and you just kind of read through it. Here's one. Have you heard anything about Pac-12 Mountain West legal dispute settlement question mark? It's getting a bit past spring break that I, perhaps mistakenly, thought was an estimated possible settlement or not time frame. I haven't heard anything, but I think we would have seen it while scrolling through headlines and whatnot. I haven't heard anything new on that. Hey guys, Iowa played Michigan and swept them. Must have
been in Ann Arbor to jump 30 spots.
That's from Sandy. Thanks, Sandy. Yeah. But that's a huge jump. It is.
It's hard to understand how the RPI works, isn't it? I mean, I don't get that. Anyway, what else?
Carter from Carlton says, my sister's dog, Captain Hardy, is the Benny's buddy pet of the month. Cool. Good for you.
All right.
She listens to every game. Any chance you could surprise her and mention Captain?
I will. I'm writing this down.
During the Benny's Buddies segment tonight.
I'm writing this down right now, so let me read it to me again, Doc.
The dog's name is Captain. Captain Hardy.
Okay, Captain.
And it's a very cute dog with a bunch of dirt on its nose.
Now, Captain Hardy, and that came from...
Captain is what it says on the...
Right, but the texture is Carter from Carlton?
Yeah.
Carter... And whose dog is it?
His sister.
And what's his sister? You didn't say your sister's name. You better text us back and give us that. Carter from Carlton's sister's dog is Benny's buddy's pet of the month. Is that how that works?
Yeah.
Okay. That's cool.
I think you get away with Captain. I don't know about the Hardy part.
Captain Hardy. I like it. What a funny skit with Charlton Heston in Saturday Night Live is him as a grocer giving prices. Price check on a can of beans, and Heston comes on with yells out the price check and just makes it up. $26. and he calls everybody that he sees, well, Captain, so I'll be thinking of Charlton Heston. That's a funny, funny bit.
Dan in Beaverton says, just wished that once a relief pitcher struggles with 3 to 4 batters in a row, the coaches break sticking to pitch counts and put in a variety of pitchers in for just the 1 to 2 innings so they're available the next night or two, especially with a 5-run or greater lead, as a fan just feels like they're staying in 1 to 2 batters too many on a consistent basis. That's Dan and Beaver.
Okay, Dan. Thank you.
And the last one here, most recent, agreed. Our pitching gave up way too many runs, and their inconsistency is still very frustrating at times. So crossing fingers for the rest of the season.
Okay. Thanks, everybody, for the contributions. We'll talk to Joe Freeman a little bit about this. He says, while listening to Seminole games, that their people there. Oh, boy, if we're going to do anything, we got to get our bullpen. I'm wondering if fan bases, and I wonder if this is the kind of year. I haven't studied Texas, Arkansas, other teams in the top 5-10 picture to know whether things are tough all over in that respect. But I kind of get the feeling they might be. We'll talk to Joe Freeman next on The Joe Beaver Show. We continue on The Joe Beaver Show. Mike Parker with John Warren and a gentleman who we enjoy interacting with at Goss Stadium at Coleman Field and elsewhere, outstanding writer for The Oregonian on the Beavers baseball beat, Joe Freeman, who will be heading down to cover tonight's game, the Beavers and Gonzaga at 5:35. 2:05 tomorrow, and tickets are available for both games, beavertickets.com, or an hour before the first pitch at the ticket window. Hope to see many of you back at Goss. And when Gavin Turley comes to the plate, my sense is, my hope is that Gavin will get a long, sustained ovation, and I hope we'll be able to tip the cap a la Reggie and the curtain call or whatever else, because he deserves it. He comes home the Beavers home run king with 46 career. Joe Freeman wrote an excellent article about Gavin's progress towards this milestone and mark that appeared over the weekend in the Oregonian as Gavin was sitting on this piece of history and has now made it with his 46th homer. So again, I hope fans, you're ready to give him the appropriate kind of response when he comes to the plate in the first inning tonight. Joe Freeman joins us from the Oregonian. Joe, thanks for your time. You'll be there tonight to cover the game. What a great story you wrote on Gavin. I borrowed from it freely and attributed it to your excellent work. But what are your thoughts about where Gavin is and kind of what you have found with him in the most recent story that appeared over the weekend?
Well, I kind of, you know, ran into a guy who's trying to live in the moment and live in day by day while also kind of starting to contemplate, you know, his legacy and his place in such a storied program. I think typically, and it's a total cliche, of course, living, you know, day by day and, you know, loving the process as opposed to the result. But I think that's been a great development with Gavin is kind of staying in the moment and following what he does. But one of the more interesting things to me beyond that was just, you know, and I noticed this immediately. I first talked to him about this very early in the season when they got back from that long trip to open the year. But him going the other way and him using all parts of the field has just been a remarkable transformation for him as a hitter. It was something that developed, you know, after last season when the coaching staff went to him with their analytics report and said, you know, basically, dude, your numbers to right and right center are terrible, whereas you pull everything and you crush the ball. But if you want to be a major leaguer, if you want to be in the big leagues for 10, 15 years, you're going to need to show that you can hit to all parts of the field. Mitch Canham likes to say that Gavin likes to hear the truth. And so Gavin took that truth and used the off season to overhaul his swing and his mental approach. And as we've all noticed this year, he is just crushing the ball to all parts of the field. And in fact, you know, he hit three home runs that three homer game he had, or excuse me, his first three home runs of this last series, they went to right and right center. So and his record breaker went mm-hmm. over to center field too. So mm-hmm. just an amazing transformation for a guy who, you know, how many times do we see him struggle with a breaking ball on the dirt over his first year and a half, 2 years. And now I can't remember the last time I've seen him, you know, strike out on a pitch like that.
Yeah. The discipline has really been remarkable to see how he's kind of honed that in, Joe. And the other thing too that jumped out at me in your article, your story about him, was how much he learned from Travis Bezzotta and indebted to Travis for kind of this stoical, unemotional approach to the craft of hitting. And that part I thought was really interesting. Could you amplify a little bit sort of what Gavin was trying to convey to you with those remarks?
Yeah, you know, I kind of asked him about Travis, and you know, Travis was a big personality, of course, but being next, they were kind of immediate buddies, and I think their relationship went up and down over their mm-hmm. 2 years together. But it's hard not to watch a guy and take something away from him, particularly when that guy is an All-American and future number one overall pick. And the thing that Gavin pointed out about what he learned from Travis was just kind of what we talked about earlier, just staying in the moment and, you know, not being emotional, not letting your, you know, kind of up and down nature of baseball get in the way of what you're trying to do. And, you know, I think he said, you know, Travis's approach was very non-emotional and analytical. And he kind of learned that when you can take the emotion out of it, it's easier to make adjustments. And, you know, he kind of said he took note of that. And you know, I think we all remember Gavin as a freshman. He had his emphatic and demonstrative debut 2 or 3 weeks that I think I've ever seen. Hit a home run in his first career at bat, hit a home run in his first Goss Stadium at bat. Yeah. Just seemed like he was going to hit 1,000 before he left. And then he had a very tough, the only person I've seen have a bigger slump was Mason Guerra last year.
Right.
Gavin just had that horrible slump as a freshman. I think the worst stretch, he went 0-for-17 with 14 strikeouts.
Right.
Many of those, I think, were breaking balls in the dirt, to be honest. But I think, you know, watching how Travis handled the day-to-day helped him, you know, those moments, if I take a step away, get back to my process work, did it day-to-day, stay emotion-free from it, kind of helps you, you know, stay in the moment and improve game by game.
Yeah, yeah, no doubt. Joe Freeman, the Oregonian, our guest, will be covering the game tonight at Goss Stadium at Coleman Field, and wrote a tremendous feature story on Gavin that if you haven't seen it, you should look it up, OregonLive.com. Joe, beyond, somebody just asked what Gavin Turley's draft projection is, and I hadn't studied that for a while. John went to work on it in the background here, and Johnny has just reported that MLB.com has a draft projection, and I was even guessing that Gavin could be moving himself towards the top 10 the way he's been swinging it and becoming a complete player, and he's listed right now at 84 in this.
I don't know if when you brought that up on your phone, if that was current. I don't know.
Well, I don't know how. I just can't believe that. He's got to be higher than that.
Well, I can add a little bit of clarity to that.
Yes.
That is a preseason prospect ranking that has,
okay.
That has been the case all season. And
thank
as a matter
you.
Of fact, you'll find that Dallas Macias is ranked 60th on that same list.
Right.
And I think there's definitely been some changes to that. As the season has unfolded. So, you know, I don't know exactly where Gavin will land. He very well could be a day one guy, but I think, you know, a second rounder is certainly at worst in the cards for him. But you've just seen such a mature, I guess that's the way I would kind of phrase Gavin's season. It's been a very mature season.
Yes.
He looks like a professional hitter to me.
Mm-hmm.
He carries himself like a professional player. And talking to other guys, they see the same thing. You know, he shows up to the yard early. He gets in his work that he needs to do. His diet and nutrition is, you know, as if he's 30. He better, certainly better than I was when I was 21 or however old he is. And so you just see a guy who's kind of hell bent on getting drafted high and being a longtime major leaguer. You know, even talking with him back to last year, guys, about, you know, the Pac-12 imploding and did he still want to be here? I kind of tracked down a few guys to say, hey, are you guys still on board here or are you going to look to transfer? How is all this kind of shaken? And this was back when Damian Martinez had announced he was leaving and the women's basketball program had its pitfalls and Jonathan Smith and so on and so forth. And Gavin's response always struck to me. He was like, I'm not going to chase, you know, here and now gains that are kind of smaller monetary gains when I'm looking big picture and making a lot of money down the road, essentially is what he said. And, you know, that coupled with just his love of Oregon State, the culture, Mitch and the coaching staff, and just, you know, he's always kind of been a Corvallis guy ever since he landed on campus. And so, I don't know, I've just seen a kid who arrived with huge eyes and home run swings and so much noise. You know, we've documented his offseason, his off-the-field interests a ton over the years. But he's a guy who's really laser-focused on baseball, getting better, and I think we're seeing that. Just his batting average alone has increases over the years. He kind of got hot as a freshman and made it respectable at the end, but it was very low there for quite a while. And you know, last year he hit .277. This year he's hitting .362. And his walks are on pace to increase, and his strikeouts are way down. His strikeout rate has gone down from something like 36% to like 21%. We've just seen him really develop and blossom into a professional, you know, mature hitter.
Last couple of things with Joe Freeman. There's another guy on the team this year that has moved into talking about the draft. I'm hearing little whispers here and there about potentially, as it shakes out, perhaps another 1-1 guy in Ivar Arquette. And wherever he goes, and it'll be in the first five picks, I would think, and he may even move up depending how others are in that conversation or going when the draft comes around. But Joe, what about this young man, Ivar Arquette? It's a 1-year wonder kind of thing, but I've not seen anybody offensively and defensively ever be a better shortstop. And I'm talking about Darwin Barney and great ones through the years, Caden Grenier in a national title. This guy for 1 year here has played the position with his bat as well as anyone in Oregon State history.
He really, and we were talking about this a few games ago at Goss Stadium, me and a few of the other writers, and kind of trying to throw out comps. Mm-hmm. And for my money, since the very first time I've seen him play, he reminds me of Alex Rodriguez, a really young Seattle Mariners Alex Rodriguez. He's so smooth. He's 6'5". He's got such a huge stature. and he just reminds me of the, you know, the plays he makes deep in the hole and the throws across his body. And then, you know, obviously his offense has just been absurd. He leads a team of 15 homers, and, you know, I think he's batting like 381 right now or something like that. And so, he's had a remarkable season, and I've heard similar things. I've certainly not gotten into any type of draft mode yet, but, you know, he was a preseason 10 pick for sure. And Coach Gibson was very clear to me when I talked to him before the season. He's like, I really believe he's a potential number one overall guy. And so a one guy. And so the Beavers, you know, they knew what they were getting in him. And I think he is, you know, both met and surpassed their expectations at some level. We've seen so many transfers over the years and so many different programs, you know, fail to live up to the hype or struggle with so many expectations. And he's really embraced those expectations. And then some, I mean, 6-for-6 with 7 RBIs and 2 home runs. I mean, you just don't see that every day.
hey, final thing, Joe, and that is – you told me, I mean, you're Florida State. I'm not exactly sure. Maybe you could remind us why, but you're in on Florida State baseball. You follow me as a fan. You grew up with them, evidently, and care about them. So you tune in, and their announcers and their people lament and worry and hand-wring over bullpen issues, apparently. I'm just wondering, as we look at the Beavers, 10 straight wins, ranked number 3 in D1 baseball, 30-7 on a pretty good trajectory, it seems, and yet not everything is always perfect anywhere. So I'm just wondering your thoughts about the Beavers and what you've seen from a pitching standpoint, what your thoughts are going forward, and maybe is it that kind of year in college baseball all the way around?
Well, I do have concerns about the Oregon State bullpen. Not in that it doesn't have the arms and the talent and the potential to blossom into a strength. It's just that we haven't seen it. You know, we've seen many a guy come in and deliver in an important moment only to flounder a night later or his next outing later. And so, as is often the case with young players, it has really been inconsistent. And so, you know, on the one hand, I answer this question in two ways. I genuinely have, I think that's the biggest question mark about this team right now. Their pitching, their starting rotation has been exceptional on the whole all season. The lineup is really rounding into form and is loaded with potent hitters and talent. It's just, there's so many questions with this bullpen. You don't really have defined roles yet. When Matthew Morrell suffered his injury and he's going to have season ending surgery, you lost your closer. And then that kind of changed everything. Joey Martin, who was in contention to be your closer, has really kind of struggled over the last, you know, few weeks. And then I could throw out 5 or 6 names of guys, Leif Palmer, Wyatt Queen, A.J. Hutchison, Zach Kmatz. I mean, I could go on and on. They've had some impressive performances again, and then followed by just what just happened here. And so on the one hand, yes, I have concerns. I think that's their biggest question mark. However, I think all of college baseball could say that because it's college baseball and there's typically a lack of strong bullpen depth on most teams. And you brought up the fact that I'm a Florida State fan. I was born in Tallahassee. Yeah. You know, I had baseball season tickets many years as a kid. So I used to go to games all the time, almost lived at Hauser Stadium. But, they're saying the same thing on their airwaves in Tallahassee right now. And so I think it's a common thing. I think there's still time for Oregon State to work it out. And most importantly, you know, I would rather have the situation Oregon State has this year than, say, 2 years ago when they didn't have power arms, they didn't have live arms, and they relied on, you know, the likes of Ben Ferrer, who was all guts and guile on the mound and an 80-something – you know, mile an hour fastball. They have 10 to 12 guys who can hit 90s. I've heard people say Zach Edwards throws 100. So, you mean, there is the arm talent there. It's just, there's a lot of work to be done about defining roles, who's your closer, and so on and so forth. And more importantly, these guys, you know, they've got to own the moment more moving forward to kind of erase some of those doubts.
Joe, it's great talking to you. Thanks for making time. Safe travels to Corvallis. We'll see you in the ballpark here in a few hours. Thanks for joining the show. Great work. Keep it up, and we'll see you soon. We appreciate it.
Hey, Thanks a lot, guys. I appreciate that, Mike, and I'm happy to join anytime. I'll see you guys in a couple hours.
Thank you, Joe. Joe Freeman, Johnny, you're going to wrap this thing up. A lot going on in the next couple of days. Tickets available for today, 5:35. So I'm out. We'll see y'all. I'll see you Wednesday back on the show. I'm not quite sure. Tuesday's a work in progress, but an early game tomorrow. I don't think I'll be popping in here. But it's great to be back with you, Johnny, and we'll see you soon. Thanks.
All right, let's take a break. Be back with our final little couple of minutes here on 1240 Joe Radio. We like Kellenberger appliances so much, we play them twice in the same stop set. Good afternoon, everybody. And let's go to the text line. By the way, I'm John. I'll be with you tomorrow for an hour and trying to line up a guest. But if not, we've got plenty of football audio from the spring game. My observations on the spring game were, there was a lot of things that were really, really positive. First of all, Beaver Nation, you really showed up. Got there a little late, maybe one play into it, and there was not a single parking spot. The entire parking spot was open or was packed. I mean, it was amazing. When I got in and looked at how it looked, I would say 3,000-4,000 maybe. I mean, it was a really good crowd. Just from observation, and I'm not the greatest in trying to figure out how many people are in the stands, but just from my observations compared to years prior, and I've seen, I don't know, however many games we've seen in the last 25 years at Racer Stadium, save for, have there any games that have gone away, the spring game? I don't remember spring games being held anywhere else. I know they have in the past, Tigard. Oh, Dennis had one that was in Tigard one year, but that was the first year. Anyway, I just thought it was one of the bigger crowds that I've seen. It was a beautiful day. It was a practice. It was interesting that last year on this day, all the media seemed to be downstairs on the field. And this year, everybody was upstairs. So the media room was packed. And being able to see things unfold from way up high, which you probably did if you were in the stands, you can see a lot of different things happening. And as we talked with Jim Wilson earlier today, Malik Murphy was tremendous. He's got that rocket arm, but he also has the sense. You could tell he's good. He's very good, and things will look a lot better this year. And Jabari Johnson has improved so much. And like I said, when Jimmy was on, he went through his progressions before. He didn't just snap and run. He really, really has looked like he knows the playbook. He has it down. And even Malik Murphy has some scrambled ability. I do recall what Jimmy was talking about on a couple of plays when he scrambled and looked very good doing it. He won't do it. He's not a runner, and he's not looking to run. And he did not. His statistics at Duke were negligible when it came to the running game. But it kind of looks pretty good if they need it or if he has to scramble, whatever. And he had a lot of pressure on him because, again, the offensive line was decimated with injuries, but there were some overthrows. But again, it's such a small sample size. It was discussed by the coaches, and we'll hear from those coaches tomorrow. I don't have time right now. And we'll hear from both Coach Trent Bray and Ryan Gunderson and from Malik Murphy himself. So I'll do that tomorrow, and we can get your phone calls and your texts on what you saw in football. Let's see here. Mike was updated April 14th. Robert Hirsch, mock draft first round projection has Iva at number 4. See, I didn't see that. While Mike was talking with Joe there, I was doing a quick Google search, and I found the same, Robert, I found the same list that you did, but that was preseason. So I'm glad that you found an update on this. So if Iva is at 14, what about Gavin Turley? Curious to know about him. By the way, I did look, I mistyped it in and put in when I first checked, Major League Baseball prospects, which included guys in minor league baseball, and Travis Bezzana, I think, was at number 7 or number 8 this year. So I think, as others have said, he could be up at the big club Cleveland by August maybe, which would be very cool. All right. Thank you, Robert, for some of that work done on the Kellenberger, or I'm sorry, it's a different show. The University Honda text line. Another text came in and said, let's not forget that the championships we won in Omaha, Casey tried brought in starters to close out games over his bullpen. Mid relief and closers have always been inconsistent at this level. Yeah, I mean, there is something to that. You want to wait until you get to that point, though, when you're at the end of your year and you'll just use anybody to get the job done. That's the key, is there is a point where you would use anybody to get the job done. Here's a text from Friday. Mike in Tigard, he said, regarding Jade and comparing college gymnastics to Olympic gymnastics, I don't know that we were doing that so much. We did mention the score differences when we were talking about Jade Carey and her near miss. In fact, a hop at the end of the vault was the difference between gold and fourth place. Now, that is amazing. A simple hop, rather than sticking the landing on a vault, she did everything throughout the rotation as well as you can, and it came down to a hop at the end of that, and it ends up costing her the gold medal instead of a fourth place finish. So that is absolutely amazing. We talked about this on Friday. He says, Olympic gymnastics is scored with combinations of difficulty and execution with scores that aren't capped like 10.0 in college. So you get rewarded for taking risks. Yeah. The routines are longer as well, like four passes on floor rather than three in college. College does not reward risk, and that if you do something, you better do it perfectly or you'll be hammered on your score that maxes at 10. So Jade could wipe most of these college women on the Olympics, but college is making her compete with one arm behind her back. I'm glad for this, Mike. I'm glad for this text, and you, it came in late on Friday, but thank you so much because that clears things up. She'd wipe the floor with most collegiate gymnasts. All right, we'll see you tomorrow.